With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Today on Off Talkle Empire, the state of Indiana goes into the timeout chair to think about what they've done. And also Northwestern and Minnesota, meaning it's not totally unreasonable to watch the entire five-game slate. That's how you explain the gutters not being cleaned out. Go with that and let us know how it works. Today on Off Talkle Empire.
Your source for Big Ten talk, it's Off Talkle Empire!
Welcome back to Off Talkle Empire. We're getting into the middle of October here in the great state of Mitten.
Folks nationwide want to talk about what happened in the SEC in terms of the rest of the country. I'm just fixated on Cincinnati dunking on Brian Kelly after they mollywopped his team in their building.
Oh yes, this was a wonderful thing. We were talking about this last week, I believe, that after Brian Kelly took Cincinnati near the mountaintop and then told them all in private that he was not leaving. And then, not only did he leave, but they found out during their team banquet that he was not at. They found out over the internet that he was ditching them for the biggest game in school history, and that was 12 years ago. So then Cincinnati came all the way back. And honestly, one of the only really truly feel-good stories in college football, they went and they took a 17-0 lead at Notre Dame. And Notre Dame never really threatened to win this game. Cincinnati just erased them. They immediately seized on some of Brian Kelly's comments earlier in the week about why he scheduled Cincinnati, to which Kelly replied that he wanted to just wanted to give those schools an opportunity to play Notre Dame. Usually those schools are wanting to do that. So Cincinnati's social media team thanked him for the opportunity and then put together a video, a mashup of 52-second video of Cincinnati coach Brian Kelly describing that day's game. How great Cincinnati's performed and they're against an opponent that had a lot of history and tradition, and that now people understand what Cincinnati is all about. They understand the Cincinnati fans and everything, and I'll just say it again, Cincinnati's the place to be. Richly deserved. That guy is an absolute son of a bitch, and I'm very glad that he got his comeuppance, and it certainly seems like people are respecting Cincinnati enough to move them up to number 5, which is, of course, the highest they're ever going to get ranked because, God forbid, they ever make the playoff.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this goes because the results in the SEC basically tell us Alabama and Georgia are going. We know that for sure. And so now the question
is, probably, like, how many wins do you think they can, or how many losses do you think they can actually take?
One. If they lose more than one, then it's very much up in the air. But I guess
play each other in the regular season?
I don't think so.
Well, because the question is, will they put Georgia in with a conference championship game loss? The selection committee has still never done this. They have never put in a conference championship game loser.
Have we had the situation where the conference championship game loser was otherwise undefeated? Has that happened?
I don't know.
Well, Iowa.
Iowa, and also didn't Wisconsin have one of those?
I think 2017 maybe.
Yeah. I believe so. So, but of course, it's not the SEC because it just means.
Well, but the point I was actually trying to get to there before the Georgia thing is, so this week Kentucky beat Florida, so that kind of rules them out. Florida's got two losses.
About, like, I think, what was it, 9 ranked schools lost to unranked schools this week?
Yeah. So, well, that was one of those. We mentioned Georgia. They beat Arkansas, so that fun ride is probably over.
Yeah, I got a question. What are we going to call our dick trip of the week? We haven't given this award out in a while.
That's true. It felt kind of mean-spirited last year, given how everything was going, didn't it?
But it felt inappropriate. And I think there is a clear-cut number one this week. I don't think you can do any better than Oregon losing at home to Stanford after taking down Ohio State, allowing 28 points to them, allowing 31 to Stanford, albeit in overtime. Still, allowing 31 points to the Stanford offense that pretty much got shut out at K-State. They scored a very, very late touchdown.
Yeah, and so of course the natural result there is now there's a very real chance the Pac-12 is out of the college playoff running.
The Pac-12 circle of suck is nearly complete.
1 week into October, because Oregon's now got this loss to Stanford that's frankly probably not going to look that great at the end of the year. UCLA lost to Arizona State, who in turn lost to BYU. Of course, you know, the funny thing is going to be when ASU runs the table, BYU likewise goes undefeated, and they put in Arizona State over BYU, even though BYU has the head-to-head win. That's going to be the thing that really reminds everyone what the true hierarchy of college football is all about. Speaking of the...
Well, I want to just get back to why Oregon is our number one with a bullet, because with a 24-17 lead, the Oregon Ducks punted on 4th and 14 at the Stanford 43 with under 2 minutes to go and allowed a touchdown with no time remaining to force overtime. I mean, yeah. It was not just the circumstances, it's how it happened. They went from having, let's see, this is a 99.9% chance of victory with 2nd and 15 at the Stanford 8 for Stanford after they got a false start. To, of course, a 100% chance of losing the game after losing the game.
Yeah. Looking at other teams, other results, Oklahoma is not blowing anybody out this year the way they usually do, but they did avoid that dangerously placed K-State-shaped Lego this year.
Skylar Thompson was back in the game, so
yeah,
that was...
And that makes it even more
impressive. Finally, Lincoln Riley has proven that he can defeat Skylar Thompson.
In single combat, yeah. Fresno State's run for the group of fives New Year's Six bid is going to end with a loss at Hawaii, always a difficult trip. But Cincinnati, BYU, Coastal Carolina keep on keeping on. Wake Forest is 5-0, and they're only ranked 19th because they're in the ACC. Elsewhere in the ACC.
Well, and you know who's not ranked in the ACC is Clemson.
Who won? Yeah. They beat Boston College and still moved out of the rankings, as I guess people decided they'd seen enough of this bullshit and don't want to have to think about Clemson's terrible offense anymore. Florida State, the winless Seminoles, very wisely avoided playing. They do not take a loss this week. That's a great strategy.
I'm seeing that they beat Syracuse 30-30-30, but...
Are you sure?
I'm fairly confident. This does certainly seem like a thing that happened. Let's look here at ACC. That must have happened fairly late. Yep. I'm seeing that Garrett Schrader is apparently a must-start in fantasy, but...
He's that guy that Mike Leach kicked out of Mississippi State because he was a running quarterback.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it's a roundabout way of losing to kind of a bad team.
So maybe they didn't play last week. I don't know. Maybe I just had a stroke while I was doing this. It was very late when I wrote this.
How much toast was smelt? Miami is the dick-trippingest team outside of Nebraska.
Yeah. What was it, like a 31-yard field goal they hit the upright on as time expired?
Yep. So it's amazing that Michigan State played two of the dick-trippingest teams in the country in back-to-back weeks.
Yeah, and we didn't really need Miami to... I guess you could call their entire approach and performance, but it's not like there was one moment against us where they really screwed it up.
And also, the California Golden Bears are truly haunted. They lost to Nick Rolovich's Cougars by a couple touchdowns. And the reason I bring this up is because they blocked a punt and allowed a first down. I have never seen that happen. They blocked a punt. I think the up back picked it up, got a sick block from the punter, and converted the 8-yard fourth down.
Well...
That's a very black-pilling experience for a football fan when your team does that.
Depending on the exact circumstances, though, if the ball is loose such that there's... At some point, I guess there would have to be a change of possession for the chains to reset, right? Such that... Because I think in some circumstances like that, if there's a loose ball or something like that and you recover it, it's just like, it's like treated as a change in possession and you get the first down no matter where you get it.
Well,
but I don't think
because that was behind the line of scrimmage.
Okay. I haven't seen the play. So.
Well, you can't advance the ball past line of scrimmage, but this was blocked behind the line of scrimmage. In any case, that's a very black-pilling thing to experience as a fan. We're very sorry that we transferred our big-time haunted energy to you in a bowl game. Cal fans, please forgive us. Let's talk about the Big Ten. The longtime blood rivals of the Pac-12. The Big Ten isn't eating itself yet, but it's about to start.
You keep saying that every week. I mean, what did we do last week? Like, Maryland lost? Did you really think they were going to make it to mid-October undefeated?
Well, of course not. But one must fall.
In one matchup, yeah. There's still a way for there to be a handful of undefeated teams after we're done with this week, though.
So let's start with the big nude slate. Michigan State at Rutgers. How about Stategers? How are you feeling about Spartgers?
I feel pretty confident. We're the better team in all three phases. I'm saying that Bryce Berringer is a better punter this year than Adam Corsack. Go ahead and try to find me online. You can't at me. Hopefully the run game is able to stay on track against an effective defensive front, though, because Nebraska gave them serious problems. Oh my God, I just confused Nebraska and Northwestern. Who's going to be more angry with me? I guess we'll find out. But this offensive line is better, but they're still not actually good, I don't think.
The only problems Northwestern gave them were exposing just how good the conditioning was as they repeatedly ran down the field after Kenneth Walker.
Right. So it's going to be interesting to see if Michigan State's offensive line can make any space for Walker against this. I don't think it's going to be as bad as the Nebraska game. At least I certainly hope not.
But they were able to, Rutgers was able to to bottle up a pretty functional Michigan rushing game. I say functional.
Which did not have anything resembling the passing threat that Jaden Reed or Jalen Naylor posed. So,
if you're looking to directly compare the two teams, this will be a benchmark.
I don't know that it will, because our approach to the game is going to be very different from Michigan's. But if you want to do the common opponent thing, Michigan plays Nebraska. So yeah, I guess we'll have a little bit more in the way of data there, but I've never thought that makes a lot of sense as a comparison after the first couple of weeks. So the good thing about Western Kentucky giving MSU a fight last week is I think based on the comments that the coach and the players make that they understand they're not good enough yet to look past anyone. And they also have something of a good fortune in the schedule there because there's a bye before the Michigan game. So they go at Rutgers, at Indiana, bye Michigan. And obviously that's the game that you're always concerned about traps before it. But if there's a nice little bye space there, hopefully they just focus on these two road games and give something like a good performance.
I don't know. What's interesting is one of the people that was working at this winery that I got our Wouldn't Fight Tripe Rooster of the Week from the Week 5 in Review episode from, we were actually talking about football, and it turns out he was at the game where the plumbing stopped working at, was it Shea Stadium then, or was it,
no,
or is it still it was, High Point Solutions Stadium?
I believe it was still High Point back then.
Okay, yeah, so there were many solutions that required a very high number of points.
Yeah, just opening the gates and letting people wander back out to the porta-potties. Very, very on top of it they were. As far as Rutgers' offense goes, really the only guy who remotely concerns me is Aaron Cruikshank. He's capable of breaking a big play if you lose track of him. But this run game hasn't, despite the fact that Isaiah Pacheco is still there and still a very capable bowling ball type, there's not a whole lot on this offense that really scares me. Vedrill's a little bit of a running threat. We faced the, like, so he's like the off-brand version of Adrian Martinez to an extent. And we did a reasonable job containing Martinez, getting a couple turnovers out of him. So I feel pretty good about our chances in this game. I'm not saying we're going to blow him out or that it's a given that we'll win, but there's enough of a body of work at this point that the MSU fans who are still saying, dude, I think we're still trash. Like, we're ranked 11th, so, I mean.
Now, I don't think that there's been a big body of evidence that Mel Tucker is a chess master, but if this ends up being a back-and-forth one-score game, I trust Greg Schiano to blink early and often.
Well, and confusedly, as though he's not sure why everyone can't see why he's, what he's doing is the best move.
Do that Tim Beckman staring into the sun face.
Yeah. I feel pretty good. I don't know that I've seen lines come out yet. It's a little bit early in the week.
Rutgers, of course, wants this to be a choppy game. In fact, a lot of chopping is there to be had in this game, because this game is to determine
who
really gets to keep bitching about chopping being a thing.
We do, because
what do you think?
Tucker was doing it earlier. I believe I read something, I think it might have been from On the Banks, saying, I don't know how they dare appropriate the slogan we've been using since 2005. I was like, oh, well, Tucker did it almost 10 years before that, during his earlier stint at Michigan State. So I'm not gonna, if sports is all about imagined grievances, right?
What do you think? Do you think we're gonna come out on the fields and warm-ups looking like sharks and jets here? Chop, 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 chop. Just chopping at each other all in unison.
Snapping their fingers, yeah. Twirling around.
Yeah, yeah, just...
We can only hope, but to be honest, the broadcast never catch any of the pregame shit. So even if that happens, we're not going to see it.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And even if they did catch that, I'm sure that the networks would be too cowardly to air it. Like Doug Baldwin pooping the football in the Super Bowl.
This seems inappropriate. We're not going to... But elsewhere in the noon slate, Maryland and Ohio State skip this one. Blood everywhere. A once again turnover forcing Ohio State defense is not what Tagovailoa needs to see right now. Notwithstanding how bad the injury looked, Dante Dimas did yell, "I'm coming back," as he was being carted off the field against that, which, like, big ups to him for that.
That's a baller move.
The defiance in the face of your own body's failure.
That's a baller move. I mean, mad respect to him.
I hope he's right.
The man who I had the most respect for saying a comment, though, was 49ers DB Quandre Diggs. When he was asked if his teammate Sidney Jones... Or no, it was not 49ers. It was
Seahawks.
Seahawks. Yeah. He was asked if his teammate blew the coverage on the long Deebo Samuel touchdown. He said, "You must think I'm some kind of snitch." But...
Political way to say
that,
yes.
That's probably the highest level of respect I had for any player's comment, but Dimas was up there. That's a baller move.
Yeah, so look, whether Dimas goes or not, presumably you game plan around Jarrett, and you dare Maryland to try and out-athlete you with their run game that involves all these sweeps to the outside with the running backs. You're not faster than Ohio State, so...
Mike Loxley did beat Ohio State once. First off, it was Jim Tressel, Ohio State. So it was substantially worse. And second, he did that with a pulverizing running game. Maryland does not have Rashard Mendenhall, nor Juice Williams.
Yeah, so...
Well,
add up all
nor
that.
Overpowering O-line. That's the big thing that they would lack.
Add up all that stuff. C.J. Stroud looked no worse for the wear with that supposed shoulder issue against a pretty solid Rutgers defense. Really a better defense than Maryland is going to bring to bear. So I'm going to go ahead and pencil this game in as a severe beating for MSU when we play them. And this one should be over by halftime.
Should be over by halftime, Wisconsin at Illinois. It's homecoming for the Fighting Illini. How do we know that? Because they're playing Wisconsin. Now, so, Brett Bielema has done maybe the one thing that he could actually be capable of doing to get me back in his corner ahead of this one. And he has announced that we're not wearing the fucking gray uniforms anymore. Holy shit, we're actually going to wear our school colors for homecoming with all the old people. I mean, that's the thing about this that always pissed me off. I don't know that I'm necessarily an old, but I do know who comes to homecoming, and it's the olds. It's the olds.
Can't confirm.
Like, whether or not the recruits care about the gray uniforms, they don't. The olds certainly are offended by them. So we're going to wear the orange helmet. The uniform is yet to be revealed.
I'm
actually kind of excited about it because, shit, I don't know if Bielema has any input on this, but the helmet that we're using looks great.
I think they usually have some. I've gotten the very strong impression that Mel Tucker is influencing a lot of branding and stylistic themes around MSU football now. Or if he's not doing it personally, then I'll
tell you what. If all Brett Bielema ever does for Illinois... is make us, like, wear football uniforms that look like football uniforms that Illinois should wear. I mean, that's better than most coaches have done for us because they sucked while we looked like shit.
It's true. Lovie Smith did suck and fail to get any movement on the uniform issue.
It went way backwards under Lovie Smith.
Yeah.
So. Went way backwards. Things were actually kind of decent under Tim Beckman, although he introduced these baffling blue face masks in 2012. And then we got a new uniform that looks good, but that introduced the grays.
Yeah.
In any case, that's about how I feel about this game.
So presumably this storyline will get more play when Illinois goes to Wisconsin next year. But this is, of course, Bielema's reunion with the Wisconsin program. Paul Christ is, of course, the plumpest, juiciest, most pear-shaped fruit off of the Brett Bielema coaching tree for the time being. I mean, Sam Pittman's probably going to, it seems like he's going to eclipse Chris pretty quick in terms of success. But perhaps there's some kind of lingering knowledge of tendency that could go either way, honestly, now that I think about it. I always say this, like, when we were talking about the Wisconsin-Notre Dame game, I made the point that I thought was very saucy at the time, like, aha, but does anyone know Jack Cohn better than the Wisconsin defense? And like, later as I was listening to the episode, I was like, yeah, but the opposite is true. Like, he knows the defense too.
Yes, and so when you consider that, when you consider that that basically makes every strategy both ways a little more effective, you go with who's got the most talent. And it's Wisconsin. Illinois has had players that have generally just failed to do things at a Big Ten level. Illinois has some players that are good, but the offensive line has certainly been an enormous disappointed. They pushed around, disappointment. They pushed around Charlotte last week, but whoopty shit. So did Duke. Like,
yeah, again, we.
So did Georgia State.
We sit here and record before the lines come out, but if the over under is anything above 40, mash the under.
I mean,
this one, am I right?
Graham Mertz has been terrible. But so was Brandon Peters. I mean,
yeah, and
he's going to be one of the ugliest quarterback matches. I mean, I think Brandon Peters could be the worst quarterback I've ever seen at Illinois. And that is a very, very high bar to clear.
And Wisconsin's going to stop you from running. They're going to make Brandon Peters beat them.
Yeah, and with the lack of anybody that can really make throws in contested traffic, you know, like contested throws in traffic, after Peters sent Luke Ford to the sidelines with a hospital ball, yeah. Thanks a lot.
But does not the equal strategy also apply for Illinois' defense? So really, this game is going to be about who is better between Graham Mertz and Brandon Peters.
I don't think that because I think Wisconsin's going to have more success running the ball against Illinois than they did against Penn State and Michigan and Notre Dame because their offensive line is certainly below Wisconsin's standards. But the Illini defense hasn't shown the ability to stop a running game of that magnitude. And by of that magnitude, I mean, like,
any good at all.
UTSA. Right?
Right. But look,
not to say anything bad about Sincere McCormick.
This is all much ado about nothing because, with all due respect, I don't think anyone outside those two fan bases is going to be watching that game when Penn State, Iowa is
I'm
going to
be in Champaign. And I was for sure not going to this game, but now I'm really thinking about it just for the chance to see them come out of the tunnel on homecoming wearing orange and blue again. And then I'll probably leave.
What if they like hit you with the neons?
It'll be great because it'll be orange.
No, I mean like neon green.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a thing I could see.
Not one of MSU's colors either, but it didn't stop them from putting us in those fucking state uniforms a couple times a year.
Tat.
That's, yeah, because you could
because you can't see anything it, right? That's on the sleeve. The sleeves are tiny now.
So damn stupid. But Tat. Anyway,
no, I mean Wisconsin should win this one easily, and it should probably be an extremely in the weight room, in the community type of score.
Yeah, like, we'll 9,
24-10,
12-9.
I mean, I just think they'll get it rolling.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's just the gap's just too big.
So. Penn State at Iowa is obviously the marquee game of the week in the conference. This is number 4 at number 3 and is an the obvious is game day releases their schedule. They're going to this game, right?
No. Game day?
Yeah. Aren't they?
No, they're going to the Texas State Fair.
You gotta be fucking kidding me.
Nope, they almost always go to that game, though. That's the thing. They almost always go to that game.
Gotta be some producer there who likes deep-fried shit.
Well, and also, if I, like, Penn State at Iowa is more important, but I'm not going to lie. Oklahoma, Texas has a chance to be more entertaining only because Oklahoma seems to be just like a hair's breadth away from tripping all over themselves.
Game day doesn't pick their games by entertainment value. Are you out of your mind? We wouldn't see so many games involving fucking Auburn if that was the case.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. No, I think this was preordained. I think they never intended to flex that one out of there. And of course, remember when Texas was back after they beat Louisiana? The mighty raging Cajuns?
Technically a ranked team.
So it's possibly that this was it was possible that this was booked then.
I guess I think you gotta leave yourself some flexibility so you can actually go to the biggest game that week. That maybe just a thought, just an idea. But no, by all means, go to Texas, Oklahoma, so we can see who. Jeez, all right. My actual point bringing that up though was that this is an afternoon game between number 4 and number 3. It's at Kinnick. Why not flex this to a night game?
Well, somebody powerful at Penn State is clearly pulling the strings to avoid that.
Oh yeah, you don't. And so
you know what? Powerful people like Penn State could be doing worse things pulling strings. So anyway.
Oh dear. Hard to know what to make of this game on the field because these are both solid to great teams across the board. They're both stronger on defense. That suggests a low-scoring game. And low-scoring games are where Kirk Ferentz lives. So I would, between that and the home field, I'd probably give the edge to Iowa here. But Penn State is good enough to make this close.
Penn State's offense has generally looked less broken than Iowa's.
Yes, and if Sean Clifford, again, this is the game where we really find out, is Sean Clifford actually good now, or has he just not needed to risk turning it over to this point? Because he's going to have to risk make some plays.
Well, and the other thing is, there is another question that you have to ask of Penn State. Can they run the ball well enough to make Iowa care about them running the ball?
Yeah, because if not,
that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and they've had problems. Their success against Indiana is promising because that is a very good run defense. But this is going to be a different animal. If Penn State's able to run the ball here enough that they don't have to risk turnovers, I would certainly favor them to pull this upset.
10-9, Iowa.
I'm going to go with 6-5, Iowa.
Well, we've been looking at it from the Penn State side of things entirely, okay? I think we need to be a little more fair and balanced in our coverage and cover this from the Iowa side, because
you really have to.
Because when you actually look at how well Iowa has done on special teams, it's the phase of the game that people want to ignore because you don't see all the flashy highlights from a touchback.
If I could we, like, I think people probably want to talk about offense more.
I don't understand why you would think something like that. Maybe all of those, younger, whippersnapping, boomerang, zooming, ultra Truman type
talk
of
about special teams more.
What were we talking about? So anyway, what's going on with soybean futures is, I think, really unprecedented in the history of the Central Illinois Valley.
Should we cut to the to the B-roll of the harvester? Is that, do you want me to roll that now or?
What were we talking about? Give me Iowa 7-3.
Gotta shake that off and get to Michigan at Nebraska. I wasn't joking when I said I hope Michigan wins this game. I don't know that I've ever actually said that sentence before in my college football fandom. You could look at the records here and conclude that Michigan shouldn't have any problems here. After all, they did just win in Madison, which is another notoriously difficult venue. But if last week was a sign of the light finally coming on for Nebraska and the result in the score column kind of lining up more with how they're actually playing down to down, then this could be tight. If last week wasn't just Nebraska emptying the clip into an already dead Northwestern corpse, then this, in terms of interesting, this game is probably more interesting than Penn State Iowa. But
absolutely, because I think that if you look at our power poll's current results, I don't know how they'll develop as more people fill it out, but by the time this episode is out, it will be published. I have Nebraska over Wisconsin right now.
Oh, hell yeah. I don't think that's close. I think they're going to win that game by a couple scores.
But I'm saying, I have Nebraska rated higher as a higher rank than Michigan's last opponent. So by all means, it should be certainly more interesting than Michigan-Wisconsin. But don't discount the legendary Memorial Stadium as an ESPN top 25 toughest places to play.
Now, are you thinking back to NCAA 99 or 98 when you say that?
Well, I'm thinking you simulate a dynasty 30 years into the future, and it'll still be like that, even if Nebraska somehow isn't good anymore.
Sure. So, on the field here, Nebraska does have the dudes on defense to force Michigan to throw the ball, and they showed a little bit of a willingness and ability to do that against Wisconsin. They're going to need to come out with a similarly aggressive game plan, though, because, yeah, letting this crowd get into it, you're not going to hear Nebraska boo their players after a couple tough series the way you heard the Boo Birds come out in Madison, which I don't think I had ever heard before.
And in Norman, Oklahoma.
Yeah, so, well, which, you know, to be honest, people are always like, oh, they're college players, you can't boo them. Like, I think most of them understand, first of all, the stakes are high enough that people are invested, are spending a lot of money to be here. They are going to boo. You are basically a professional athlete without the salary.
Well, hey, I always put it...
And also, I'm more booing the coach than the players.
Yep, exactly. That's so... what I was going to say. That's what I say. No, I'm booing the coach.
Yeah. But anyway, it's going to be, like I said, very interesting there to see whether and to what, how Michigan balances their play calling, because taking a couple deep shots early last week paid big dividends for them, in my opinion. And then defensively, this should be more of a challenge for Michigan than they've faced so far. We thought they were going to get a test from Wisconsin. They really didn't. Washington on paper should be good on offense, but they aren't.
So Michigan hasn't faced an offense with the ability to make explosive plays like Nebraska.
Right. Explosive, again, could mean a couple different things.
Exactly. But so the thing is, Michigan has played one game where it's been like a reasonably close end game scenario. Mm-hmm. I guess you could kind of count Washington, but it didn't really seem like it was all that close.
Yeah, agreed. And I do want to mention that, yeah, it's true Western Michigan has a good offense on paper, but it was also the type of offense that Michigan would be able to hammer once they made some adjustments, and that's what we saw. So again, in terms of a real wire-to-wire, athlete-to-athlete challenge, this will be the first offense Michigan has seen that is on their defense's level.
So do you think this will be a close game?
I do think it will be.
If you think it's a close game, then there is only one logical conclusion here, and that is that Michigan wins. Because have you seen Nebraska in close games?
Yeah.
Yep, so you're going to an ESPN 25 toughest places to play, and the end result will be, congratulations, you have completed an ESPN instant ASIC. That's the only way I can see that one ending.
We'll take it in heartburn. Yeah. We'll take a turn now around the rest of the country. You mentioned the Red River Shootout apparently hosting game day for some damn reason, even though it's the worst Oklahoma team of the last decade.
I think Texas is going to win that game.
And Texas continues to not be back.
I think Texas is going to win that game. Just Oklahoma is in love with making mistakes this year, and it just seems like a... Texas is not better than them, but I think Oklahoma is going to dick trip just enough. And like I said, they had an explosive receiver, and then he went to Miami. I guess to escape the coming dick trips from Oklahoma, but little did he know that Miami would be doing just the same thing. It was like when Robbie Anderson thought he was free of Sam Darnold. You'll never be free of the Darnold.
And then he just walks into the locker room and does the same point he did on the ESPN graphic right at Anderson.
In your locker room.
Indefinitely.
So, Arkansas at Ole Miss for the SEC West runner-up. Blue ribbon.
Both teams coming off swinging at the champ and missing. We also have Georgia at Auburn, which actually was my guess for the dumb place they would put game day instead of Kinnick. I think they do release a schedule a few weeks ahead of time, but I never look at it because I don't watch the show anymore.
Man, pardon the interruption, dunked on Lane Kiffin extremely hard in the week leading up to the game. And then Alabama and everybody else online dunked on Lane Kiffin for saying some reasonably entertaining things pregame that didn't even strike me as particularly arrogant. It's like, you know, he was just like, oh, you know, you might want to get your popcorn ready. I don't know. I hope we don't run out of game, you know, pages for this game plan. And it's like, Man, come on. Why do you hate fun so much?
No, that's exactly what it is. Is that because so many coaches now follow the sterilized Belichick or Saban script, thinking that's what you have to be a good coach and taken seriously, whenever someone does say anything remotely interesting, it's like, whoa, the drama.
Yeah, and like, I can't remember what... you know, what absolute stooge it was that went on a rant about how Lane Kiffin is not even a football coach because he's a clown over on Pardon the Interruption. Like, congratulations on never watching football in your goddamn life. There are plenty of people that are very proud to have been coached by Lane Kiffin, and he's been a difference maker everywhere he's gone. Now, did he get in a pissing match with Al Davis, who was losing his marbles by this point?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
And... by all means, Lane Kiffin was probably in the right there, and he went out in the best blaze of glory I've ever seen, kicking a 76-yard field goal. Okay. The USC thing, I don't think was Lane Kiffin's fault. I think they got worse after he left. They put it together for exactly one season since then, going through several coaches who were substantially more embarrassing than, you know, USC lifer Lane Kiffin.
And he never did anything there that was all that.
No, all he did was lose some games with overwhelming talent, which like
is the post Pete Carroll tradition at USC.
Yeah, so. the only thing that Clay Helton's doing differently is the overwhelming talent is going away.
Yeah.
So, by all means, Lane Kiffin deserves no scorn here. It's refreshing to see somebody have a different approach to this game, and it's unfortunate that they just couldn't overcome the vast talent advantage that Alabama had.
Yeah.
But hopefully that'll change.
Elsewhere, you have Boise State at BYU. You know, 5 years ago, this probably would have been a marquee game. Kind of feels like Boise State's time is ending here. Once Peterson left, Harsin sort of kept it afloat for a while, but yeah, it's got like an Elves in Middle Earth vibe where it's like, yeah, it was good while it lasted, and it lasted for quite a while, but it is coming to an end.
Would you then compare Nick Saban and Alabama to the Dwemer in Elder Scrolls lore, where they're basically at this point, hopefully on the verge of like completely vanishing from the earth forever after discovering how to manipulate the heart of God? That seems kind of like Nick Saban's side project, does it not?
Yeah, he's got the lake house. What, you really think he wants to deal with a boat? Can you picture the complaints that Nick Saban would have about boat ownership? Good grief. Elsewhere, for your Pac-12 After Dark viewing pleasure, consider UCLA at Arizona, where UCLA is coming off a loss to Arizona State. And Arizona, one of the worst teams in Power 5, gave Oregon a fight last week and softened them up for Stanford.
We never did order those sickos shirts, did we?
Not yet. There's time.
Hey, I'm going to shout out to another really fun Twitter follow for college football that I've seen. It's at Sickos Committee. It's great. They track games that sickos will be interested in watching and also do a lot of Photoshops with the sickos guy face. It's the one that I sent you of bowl-bound UT El Paso with a mine cart with the sickos face on the front of it collecting scalps. Yes.
Your source for Big Ten Talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!